This is Betty Smith, 16th of May, 1992. Finding the Voice of the Self, tape 2 of 3.
What we'll do is, there's a little time to, if you would like to share anything or speak to your statement or any other image that you have that you want this time. As I say, there's no obligation to speak to the statement. I just hope it might stimulate something. Sometimes one experiences it as a synchronous drawing, occasionally. Sometimes not. But
did you have duplicates in there?
Yes, there are some duplicates, yes.
No, I didn't.
There are some duplicates. It also helps to hear what somebody else says about one that you drew. Mm-hmm. All right, does anybody care to or not?
I pulled Leffy and then Demosthenes as a second one. And again, I didn't hear you.
Wait just a second. Wait till he closes. There, now it's be nice and quiet.
I pulled both forgetting and remembrance.
Oh, really?
At the same time, or back a second time. But this relates, I just keep thinking of dream images that are still important to me. And another figure in a dream as a kind of guardian woman figure, someone who came out of the night to protect me. Uh-huh. In a mountainous area. And told me her name was Minna Min.
Minna?
And Minna happens to be a very much used family name. The mm-hmm. old German name, it means love. Mm-hmm. And when I went to research it again, it also has to do with remembrance. The goddess Minerva, mm-hmm. which is Athena, evidently. So she's been a very important figure mm-hmm. for me. And I haven't forgotten this over the past, whatever it was, almost a year. Mm-hmm. So pulling Mnemosyne mm-hmm. seemed to be relevant to whatever is going on in my life. It has to do with love and remembrance.
Love.
And evidently connection to ancestral mm-hmm. ties of some sort.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Hmm. It's always important to see what's pulled out of that place of memory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anything else? That, even if you don't make a comment, it would be good if we heard read probably the statements, because it shows something of the role of the goddesses. I took two of them out, though. Yes, all right.
Mm-hmm. This one is Aphrodite met. Aphrodite stood at a sacred gateway and spoke to the traveler. Embrace the desire that is most true to yourself, and you shall know the satisfying bond, which is my gift. Mm-hmm. How addictions can get one sidetracked because you're not being true to yourself in an addiction. Mm-hmm. And so that's what that spoke to me about. The satisfying bond is Aphrodite's gift.
Yes.
And that comes from being true to yourself.
Right, right. Thank you. That's a really important connection. I think. And the word, excuse me just a moment, but the word, no, go ahead. The word bond is so important. We didn't discuss that with Aphrodite, but she is the maker of the bond, she and Eros. Really what sticks, really what binds. And there is so much today in which people are cut off and not really don't have bonds. So I think that's terribly important about Aphrodite. Just a minute, Mardana was going to speak.
Mm. Mine is Athena Met. Traveler, my buoyant step is needed and my owl eyes in going forward towards the oracle.
Yeah.
I saw a buoyant step as the energy.
Uh-huh.
At which I wondered if this is where maybe an Eros connection might be found for me, energy giving.
Uh-huh.
And the owl eyes, of course, I see as the night vision.
The night vision. Yes. Yes.
And I felt good because it said traveler, so it means that maybe I am going somewhere. And also, when I was in Greece, I searched Athens for an Athena.
Did you?
To take home with me, and I found one. In fact, actually, it was the only one I liked was actually a chikane, which I had turned into a necklace. And I always wear it when I travel.
Really?
When I took my last trip, I forgot it. I was halfway to the airport in the cab, and I remembered I didn't have it on. And I didn't think I had time to have him go back and get it. I had a wonderful trip. Mm-hmm. The unusual thing about it was, normally when I travel, I have great dreams, and I had no dreams on that.
No dream. Now that's the first connection of Athena to dreams I've known. That's varied. Yeah, okay. So she must be a very important gateway there.
Here's another.
Thanks, Mardana.
Mm-hmm. Aphrodite met. The goddess stood before the sacred entrance and said, "Traveler, know what you truly desire, for here lies your true nature and innocence." And many, many years ago, I read somewhere there was a tree or trunk something across the road. It's not there to block your path, but to make you think, to make you halt, stay and think for a while. And this speaks somehow to the same. Often we don't even know there is an entrance. So the goddess marks the entrance and makes us reflect. And we are rushing, we're stopping only at red lights, but we only always bother that we don't switch to green fast enough. So it's very hard often to know our true nature. And it's interesting how it's then connected with the innocence.
The innocence, yeah.
Because the innocence is like you discussed the springs.
The springs, yes.
Out of which something new can be created.
Yes, yes.
That was an Aphrodite statement?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Read it one more time, if you will.
The goddess stood before the sacred entrance and said, "Traveler, know what you truly desire, for here lies your true nature and innocence."
Mm-hmm. I just somehow think there's a purity in our central desire.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Does that suggest you know that before you enter in?
I would certainly see it as part of what's constellated at the gateway, is that one discovers one's true desire.
Simply by coming to the gate.
And or that the desire and the Eros connection is the gateway. I mean, it can be either way. It's not a hard translation. It's just a.
And I've been most of my life identified, I think, since I was about four, with being a mother. And I've loved being a mother. And everybody left home last year. So it really brought me to a new gate. And I felt really aware that whatever was going to happen, it wasn't going to be the Demeter anymore. It was going to have to be an energy and something that would have to do with Aphrodite, and something that would have to do with Persephone, as those kind of combination. Because I felt, when my children left home, I felt childlike. I felt like something new was happening. I was put back again. And I felt that energy. And the question that always comes up is, but what do I want now? What do I really want? What is my desire? Because I can't be somebody's mother anymore. So what is it? And it seems like that's exactly what was phrased in this statement. You know, really come to know what is the central desire to be able to move on at all.
I sympathize with that.
Can you?
There's some of that in the one that I get. The goddess Diona?
Yes, okay.
Diona? I am the goddess who tends the dwelling place at the roots of the tree. My wisdom is of earth, of the seasons of life cycle. Therefore, my oracle never deceives. Which to me seems something that I feel, you know, sort of attuned to or conscious of, as is. But then I got Apollo Met. The god of the oracle spoke to the traveler, bring me your question, whittled down and smooth of excess. Then I shall reply to the question behind the question. Which for me is, I think I've found various ways never to do this whittling yet. You know, I haven't found a lot of other things to do besides the whittling. So however true the goddess's oracle may be, that's not very much use to me because I haven't got the question really. So a lot of procrastinating, but they go together interestingly for me.
I didn't read the one in Namasini, which I think is interesting.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Namasini, goddess of memory, said to the journeyer, have you not long forgotten something? Within my scroll, your deep longing is recorded. Bathe in my strong spring waters and remember. Is Namasini pictured as the holder of a scroll? I mean, because I've never heard this.
No, this not necessarily. But memory is a kind of scroll. I think that's why the metaphor occurred as a. It is a very old text that she possesses.
So you meet Namasini before you enter the temple. This is how you formulate the question.
The temple's not mentioned here. Oh, you mean at the rite of Labadia that I was describing?
Yeah. We're all talking about what is our deep desire, what is our question, where do we go next?
Yes.
So if within memory it is recorded and we can access it,
mm-hmm.
or does
mm-hmm.
that obviate the need to question? I don't know.
Well, I think what's important here is is a connection to realize that there is an archetypal memory. There is an old memory that's held in the unconscious, and it does somewhere have something of one's deepest longing in it, and with it usually one's disappointment, some pain of disappointment around it. And she's reminding you in the statement, mythologically she's reminding one that she holds that scroll of the crucial memory. And, of course, when you bathe in Namasini at Lavadia, it causes you to remember. So that's what that last statement means.
And then after you do this,
mm-hmm.
what is that the end of that ritual? Or is that just a preparatory mm-hmm. to...
No, it's not the end of the ritual. That's when you tell the priest your...
Okay.
what you have seen or what you have remembered, what you've learned, what's come to you, what's come together. Mm-hmm. But it's well for you to use the statement in any way that occurs to you, you know.
I have number 10 as well. Goddess Dayana Dodona. I am the goddess who tends the dwelling place at the roots of the tree. My wisdom is of earth, of the seasons, of life's cycle. Therefore, my oracle never deceives. And this is meaning. That's intimidating, but this is.
It's all right. It's meaningful to me because my artwork is now moving into clay almost exclusively. And my oracle is in clay now, so that.
Oh.
And I'd like to share a synchronistic experience that I just discovered.
All right.
This morning I was searching around for a sketchbook to bring, and I pulled this off the shelf. And the last time I pulled it off the shelf was 3 years ago when I was at an art therapy conference in Albuquerque, and I'd just like to read you a couple of my notes on Lethe and memory. Mm-hmm. That have a lot more meaning to me right now, but about the initiation, which is that which is hidden, the Lethean water experience allows us to go into what is hidden. It's a subtle disassembling of the image.
Close this door, please. Uh-huh.
So it allows the image to kind of go away, the image that we know.
Mm-hmm.
The memory, I think it's hard to satisfy this thirst and this need to accomplish and be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
The memory that we have is the memory of the self, and that is taking a drink from the self.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I remember these words so well.
Really?
Years ago, and here they are right now.
My goodness.
Thank you.
When you picked that up this morning. Wow.
I have number 5.
All right.
Just Themis met. The regular goddess Themis said to the traveler, prepare yourself for the dream, for the earth's oracle shall speak to you through the dream. I thought this was particularly appropriate because I've been dreaming of dreaming, and I dream that in so many layers it's hard to wake up sometimes, but to remember the dream is to meet death of some kind or to become comatose of some kind. And so after I read this, I just sketched this out real quick because it has images of the dreams that I've had or the feelings that come through on this. Mm-hmm. But it gives it a whole different idea of meeting Themis and speaking to me through a dream. It seems more benevolent now, where before it's always seemed kind of nasty.
Because Themis does indeed feed, nurture, not only the dream, but infant Apollo, the emerging godchild.
Right.
Yeah. That's very important. All right. Glad you drew it too. Anything else? Yes. Mm-hmm.
I had Themis met. The goddess of the first oracle said to the traveler, am I not the nurse of baby Apollo? I know what food to give this growing voice of wisdom.
Could you just read that once again? I tuned in on the first few words.
Themis met. The goddess of the first oracle said to the traveler, am I not the nurse of baby Apollo? I know what food to give this growing voice of wisdom.
Okay. Okay.
One thing that occurred to me was that that sense of quiet that we have to know when food is being presented, to know when the question is there, so to speak, that waiting for that to come through rather than trying to force, you know, to take the tripod or, uh-huh. you know, to run with it, but to have that sense of balance, of intention or wanting. Or I forget how you described it last night, something about expectation, which I think of as intention because it has that quality of being able to stay in that middle space of being aware and conscious but not fixating at the same time. Pardon?
Did you say attention?
Intention.
Oh, intention.
Yeah. It has an element of expectation to it, but for me it has a little bit less of a grasping quality, mm-hmm. but an intention of moving, of movement mm-hmm. and of development, but being able to be in a space of being open to whatever that
yes,
might
right.
show up as.
Yes. That's a good word for it.
Mm-hmm. I think while I'm here, I'll take advantage of the microphone set up and do this. I pulled two, which I was describing, were for me remarkably synchronous. And one is, it's number 7, Hermes Met. And Hermes said, I am the god of the road and shall be guide to you, for the road of the oracle can be long, yet only the far journey holds the medicine one seeks. And I'm a lifelong wanderer and trying desperately to stay in one place.
Oh,
and so to be told that only the far journey holds the medicine is really rough stuff. And then the other one is Hephaestus Met. And the god of the forge said to the traveler, where will Pythia, the priestess of the oracle, fine to sit in the temple unless you shape the tripod, bring it to her as a gift. Well, the tripod has been very powerful for me because, for one thing, I'm the son of a blacksmith and toolmaker and sculptor, so that I've grown up with the concept of forging and have done a little forging. And I'm now trying to move my life, among other things, by moving into teaching about art, and so I have purchased a camera and have not taken a picture yet because I haven't bought the tripod. And I'm postponing the purchase of the tripod, so...
Good. Wow. Never heard anything like it. Right. The scribe who wrote these down almost added a P.S. to the Hephaestus one saying, not the Hephaestus one, the Hermes one, to only the far journey holds the medicine one seeks. This does not mean go out and buy an airline ticket to wherever. Different kind of far journey. It's amazing you got both. You got the gods, no goddess, both gods.
Huh? I've been having trouble with goddesses lately.
You've had enough trouble. Okay, did everybody get to speak who wants to? Or anybody else want to say anything? Yes. Mm-hmm.
First is Aphrodite Met.
A little bit louder.
Aphrodite Met.
Uh-huh.
The goddess stood before the sacred entrance and said, traveler, know what you truly desire, for here lies your true nature and innocence. This for me is about my struggle right now, I feel, in trying to go deeper into myself to find out what it is that I truly desire. And I think that was my attraction to your dialogue of yesterday, that there was, for me, something more in it than just the words that I wanted to try to embody in some way. The second one is Hermes Met. Hermes said, I am God of the road and shall be guide to you. For the road of the oracle can be long, yet only the far journey holds the medicine one seeks. There's something in me that knows this, but I think that I was born with the stamp of impatience, and so this also doesn't appeal to least part of my personality, which wants to know the answers right now, mm-hmm. and is very concrete. And that's what's had precedence so far, and it's something that I would like to recede a little so that something else could come.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
I also got number 5. Themis met. The oracular goddess Themis said to the traveler, "Prepare yourself for the dream, for Earth's oracle shall speak to you through the dream." And I took that in the first way, that perhaps there's a dream coming I should be ready to receive on the inside. And the other is that I work with dreams in my practice, and it is a different space when I receive the dream. And I can really feel it. I go into a different space to receive that dream from the other person.
Yes.
And it's different.
All right. Seems very affirming of that work, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, for some reason, when I was putting these together, I took out all the Hephaestuses except that one. So you've got the Hephaestus and the tripod, Carl. You got the Hephaestus and the tripod, but I took out all the Hephaestuses because I thought it was such a difficult one. I don't know what I thought. Something about shaping the tripod. That it sounds, it might sound like an enormous task to the conscious side to have to bring the tripod for the Pythia to sit on. Even though there is eventually, you know, there is this reciprocal relationship in inner work that is so important. And you see it in all of the Greek ritual, where you have to bring something to the god or remind the god of his or her power and of what you would like to have. And then you reciprocate with gratitude when you receive a gift or a healing, something appropriate to your what you're able to give. Often a relief inscription of some sort that told your experience. But so this is a bringing of the tripod. It is a kind of providing for Apollo.
Mm-hmm. The tripod is anything true in its relation to the tripod is the simplest structure of certain support, mm-hmm. and it's also well designed for portability. And it's interesting that Heracles picks up and carries away the tripod, and now all these tripods are portable and foldable, and it's this image of stability and movement.
Yes.
Together.
Yes. Right. Okay. All right. It's also worth remembering that Asclepius, according to the northern myth of Apollo's son, the god of healing, was born on the river Lethios, which is a river in Thessaly. It's the same as Lethe, but that's just the modern Greek ending, Lethios. Born on the river Lethe in Thessaly. So I've often kind of pondered that, what the relationship must be between the kind of cleansing appropriate forgetfulness, a certain cleansing of things that have stuck too long and have obliterated one's way of seeing, the difference between the necessity of that in relationship to healing, since he is the god of healing. And that's the particular stream of water. It's also this stream of oblivion, forgetfulness, oblivion, a very profound image of change. Very profound image of change. in the south of Greece, they have a slightly different myth, but that's what they have in the north of Greece. Now, let's see what we do in the time that remains. Would you like to hear a... It's not very long, I don't think. Let's see how long. Well, I have something of a dialogue. I think Pan has been a very important God for me. He came up in active, really active imagination. A goat figure came up in active imagination. In some actual writing of little stories, a goat came up about 25 years ago. The goat and cow dialogues, I called them. They were the earliest dialogues that I wrote. They were not mythological dialogues, but they were conversations between a goat and a cow. The cow being kind of, the goat being the kind of naive, exuberant figure, and cow being a kind of wise, reflective creature. And those went on for a few years, and then I put them aside, and very recently they started coming up again, just in this year, in 91, I guess, end of 91. But a few years back, in active imagination, the goat came up in a new way, as in a long fantasy tale that I did in verse, turned out. No, not verse, but poetry. A long tale of Eve, who is called Earthmaid in the Garden of Eden, and her conversation with the serpent seer, who turns into a kind of goat figure. Now, I mentioned that. I don't really have any interpretation of that. I've never publicly read or used that long tale. But more recently, a figure has come up, a goat figure again, in active imagination. And in this one in particular was with the work with Io at Dodona. Io, according to the myth, the cow maiden, who was the priestess of Hera, and is transformed into a cow maiden, if you'll recall, after Zeus has loved her to hide her from Hera. That's the ostensible reason. I really believe there are more profound reasons that she has to go through the cow form. And she comes on her long, long journeying, her trek, which takes her across Greece, south to north, and across to Asia and down at last to Egypt. She visits Dodona in her Greek trek and comes to see Zeus, now not as lover, but as the god of the oracle. But while she stays there, and I'm not going to read you that dialogue, there are some dialogues between Io and Zeus, but while she stays for a time at Dodona in this very remote place, which Dodona is. It's a little valley surrounded by hills, the Pindus Mountains, not very far inland from the Ionian Sea in northeastern Greece. And even today, it is still quite isolated. And it has... It had the sacred oak tree there where the oracle was delivered. But I'd like you to hear part of this anyway. She has come out on the hillside near the sanctuary. It's at noon when the sun is, of course, high. It's very quite hot. And she says, Io is a maiden who is under the cow skin. I repeat that. She is not simply a cow, okay? She is a woman, but she is in the cow form. And so she's musing, and she says, this is the fateful hour of noontide. And a husky voice said, aren't you afraid to be abroad at this time, cow maiden? And she turned to see who could have spoken, and before her stood a short, somewhat shaggy man with rather pointed chin and beard, whose bright twinkling eyes regarded her with open curiosity. He wore a rough shepherd's cloak, and he carried a herdsman's crook. Shepherd, Io said, noontide is the least among my fears. And you, why are you out at this hour when every living thing seeks shelter from the heat or else sleeps? Oh, well, this is my hour. To be sure, it's mine. Io peered more closely at the shepherd. If it's the hour of the shepherd, then where could your flock be? My flock, she wishes to know. Oh, my flock, ha, ha, he cried. The notion appeared to amuse him. Well, have you lost it? I'm always losing a sheep or two and having to go after them. But the goats, no. No goat goes and gets himself lost. He's too smart for that. I'm something of an old goat myself, the Greeks say. Are you not Greek too? I am, that I am. But the Greeks have put me out to pasture. They forget about me out here in the distant mountain pasture. And when someone comes upon me all sudden-like, why then he panics. They say I'm scary. His voice held disdain. She tried to speak politely. You are a bit scary, Shepherd. I mean, it's rather a matter of not being used to somebody like you. There is nobody like me. No one at all, girl, that's a fact. And he turned his keen gaze upon her. You're a maiden who's seen a lot of the far pastures. Alas, it's true, but how did you know? I could tell right off. Most maidens carry with them the look of what they've been doing and what they are about to do, but not you. At once I saw in your eyes the broad pastures in the far places. I didn't know. You and I are two of a kind, Dio. There's something that ties us together. Oh, how could you possibly know my name, or even that I am a maiden and not a cow? The fateful hour of noontide is yours, you said. Why, the hour of high noon belongs to Pan and is dangerous. Pan, the god of flocks. You can call me Pan if you like, he said. He took out a small instrument made of reeds of varying lengths joined together, drew it from his shaggy cloak, and he began to play a lilting tune that sounded like a chorus of droning grass creatures. And he does say to her, you do have a thing for pastures, I'll say. Look, Io, you were waiting for me in my hour. You can't deny it. It is said to be the hour of Pan's madness. Whoever said that never came to meet me but ran away. So there's no madness that Pan brings about? My gift might look mad from the outside, but it's not an outside thing. Is it a happening of some sort? I must tell you, Pan, that I am ever so tired of happenings, she said. when you say my name, it tickles me. I like it very much, she said. He grinned broadly, and she noted that his face, with the wide-spaced eyes, held a suggestion of a goat. About happening, sweet maiden, since you asked, I am nothing without happenings, nothing at all. I can tell you that you've had a hard time, but don't run away from happenings. If you do, you'll live half dead. You'll be all dried up and far away, even though your body's right here. The trouble is that what happens to me stays with me on and on. Always I'm looking back and remembering the time of the joyous happening, and I'm plagued by its absence. You're trying to prop up an old happening, and you can't do it, he said. What you must do is get ready for the new happening. When is this new happening to be? Ah, that's the right question. Yes, indeed. The happening is a when thing more than a what thing. You mean it has to do with time? The right moment, yes. When it's ready, of course. And then she tells him, and I don't want to read it all to you, but she tells him, I'll skip a bit, about her great love back in the meadow, her love of Zeus, way back at the beginning. Seemed like the beginning of things. And what a great happening it was. And she says it's all in the past. Or no, she doesn't say it's in the past. She asks him, does it belong only to the past? She asks him, does it only belong to the past? He says, ah, Io, Io, your love of Zeus is not fenced in by past, present, or future. Why, it's like the eternal goat. It leaps over every fence, even those of your memories and complaints. That love is here and now. That's past your knowledge. Past your knowledge. It is? Then why is it that that love often seems lost to me? Because you try to fence it in among happenings that come and go. It's not that kind of happening. Do you know what you've done to this passion from the gods? You've up and decided that it was an experience, he said. What's wrong in that? It truly was a tremendous experience. But don't you see? You're insulting it, that's what. What is a tremendous experience anyway? It's something already past and done with that you hem in with sentimental thoughts. Besides, you drape banners over it and worship it. A light came into Io's face for a moment, and a small smile was there. I believe I'm beginning to see. Experience comes and goes. It dies. But this love that I treasure is different somehow. He nodded. Still, this love of yours and Zeus's is full of happening. When you step into the happening, you meet the one who's waiting for you, and nothing in you turns aside. In that same moment, you greet the whole living world. And then he tells her that he saw her. He was present in the far pasture when Zeus came. He saw Zeus come as the cloud. And he said he would like to have frightened her or gotten her attention, but then he saw the cloud Zeus and he bowed out. And she tells him that she was never the same after this happening. Before that, she was the child of her parents and the priestess of Hera, but this brought something very new in her life. And let me skip down to where she's regretting that she's no longer a priestess, and also regretting that the love of Zeus doesn't seem to be presently happening. He says, "Shall I tell you a secret?" She nodded eagerly. "I have a certain power to make the new happening. I am Pan. Where do you think that Pan is, Io? Am I only to be found among the sheep and goats? You see, I am somewhere else. I am found wherever the human individual dwells deeply under his animal skin, at the core of what pulses, desires, and goes forward to claim its own. There am I. Folks say I'm wild. Bah! What do they know of the chaste and ecstatic wildness? They're busy thinking that they themselves are tame, and they lock up this chaste wildness that I have." And then he talks about the wildness as something in which one knows what is wanted. Through the wildness, one knows one's nature and what is wanted. The beast in us never compromises. That's the saving thing about the beast. He will never be other than what he is. And because of this, the beast in you keeps you from losing yourself. And it is the wild place alone, he says, that gentles the beast. And she says, "I perceive both exuberance and delight are stored up in you like water in an underground spring." So I'll stop with that.
The first trip to Seattle was a two-day seminar, 2 days like this, where she worked primarily with myth of evil. And that is going to be a book, right?
Yes, it's shaping up. It's like shaping the tripod, I think. It's shaping up. It's fairly close to finished, I do believe. And it really is going to be primarily the tale told in this manner, through the dialogues, through the encounters of the Io with the various figures, out of her various experiences, out of her happenings, including her arrival in Egypt. And I'm in the section where she actually becomes queen in Egypt. And she has a child. She has Zeus's child, finally. Zeus does come again. She is not pregnant on this long, long journey, but she later is pregnant and has a child by Zeus. But there's a little bit more work on the queen that hasn't come through. So I'm doing a 5-day seminar this summer on the queen, and I hope that will bring forth the rest of the dialogue. I can send it off. So it probably, it may be called, what I call them right now are the Greek dialogues. Simply the Greek dialogues. This will be a section of the Greek dialogues. The whole tale of Io. But it will be a book in itself. Small book. Yes. Well, yes, I think she has a connection to Hathor, because the cow goddess of Egypt. And even Nut, the goddess Nut, the heavenly goddess of Egypt, sometimes took the form of the cow and carried the sun on her back. Sun god Re. Yes, it's a very, very old feminine connection, I think. And Hera herself, who's the goddess of Io, was known to take the white cow form. She was said to have cow eyes. The only thing that persisted in classical times was the reference to her as having the beautiful eyes of a cow. The cow eyes. Owl eyes, the owl eyes for Athena. But Hera had more than Hera, and then it might have been somebody else, but I
know it was Hera.
I think it's Hera. No, Athena had very lively eyes. Very bright. And, in fact, Odysseus's name for her was Bright Eyes sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think so.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the only.
Yes.
So. Is there any sense of the Greek pantheon deriving from Egypt in any way?
Oh, yes. There's undoubtedly some connection there, perhaps via Crete. Quite a bit of the scholars differ on where these things come from. Aphrodite probably came from Asia. Was probably a Semitic goddess, closer to the Semitic goddess. But there are those, and especially one of the latest scholarly works on Athena thinks Crete probably for Athena. Mm-hmm. But Hera would seem to have a connection to Egypt through Hathor. Mm-hmm. But I hope I think what the reason I brought this particular dialogue, it seems to be different from the others, besides the fact that it came up at this oracle place, and is that the sense of the archetypes connect us to the deepest instincts in the psyche, the deepest instincts at the base of the psyche. They are images out of the instincts, according to Jung. So that everything is, the archetypes are not just ideas or a high base, they're not abstractions. They are really, have a footing in our nature, the nature of the psyche. And that's why they have such a powerful pull on us. And Pan in particular is kind of a, for me and probably for a lot of other modern people, is probably a more obscure and distant connection, or was. And it's an elemental kind of instinctuality that has been thrust aside a lot in our culture.
I've been having trouble with this for some time about Pan and the noonday sun, because Pan also was that came out at night to Pan and human.
Yes.
Frightened. And I know Hilma talks about Pan and the noonday sun, and I just had a tremendous problem with that.
Yes, I found it rather startling when I first read that he was connected to, that noontide is connected to his madness. And they really did have superstition, the Greeks did, that lasted well up, I think, into the 20th century, of not being abroad at noontide.
Well, you're only mad over this, all conscious, uh-huh. It's all sunny, conscious,
yes.
Brightest sun of consciousness. Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, whatever. Yes, that's part of it. Also gives them a good excuse to go home for their siesta. But no, it is something powerful there. Well, I thank you for all of your participation. I just felt a very warm sense of participation in this whole thing. There were very many elements, but I hope some of them will come together in your own individual work in relationship to dream and inner work, the voice of the self. And I hope you'll go on. I hope you will continue to be interested in myth. So maybe sometime I can come back. Thank you. Thank you.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.